San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
I think we ought to get into our show tonight, right, Richard?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Introduce our guest, Joe.
We are honored to have, for his exit interview, the 34th mayor of San Diego, former chief of police, former head of nonprofit organizations, and headed for more greatness, the personable, the wonderful, the affable Mayor Jerry Sanders. Mayor, good evening. How are you tonight?
Oh, I thought you were talking about somebody else. Joe.
Richard's used that same line before.
Yeah.
Well, it is just great to have you here. I think this is like the last full hour of radio you're going to do while in office, correct?
Well, it will be.
Yeah, I know you'll do some other radio, but I don't think you're going to do a full hour. So we would really like to just get into your history, your bio, you know, your accomplishments and the future and all those other good things. But anyway, so born and raised where, and then how did you find your way to San Diego?
Well, I was born in San Pedro up in the L.A. area. Mm-hmm. My dad was a Los Angeles police officer. Rode a motorcycle for almost his whole career, and we grew up in Wilmington and then moved to Lakewood, and went to Long Beach Jordan High School, Long Beach City College, then transferred down to San Diego State in 1970, and it's probably the best move I ever made. I've had a great time in college, in fact, a little too great. Literally took me 20 years to get my bachelor's degree. But, you know, it gave me the opportunity to go in the San Diego Police Department in 1973. And
at the age of what?
At the age of 22.
Isn't that insane?
And I can't think of a better job in the world than being a cop in San Diego.
So were you a senior in college when you joined the police force?
I was. I joined on April 13th of 1973, and I only had about a month to go to get my degree. And I remember going into the chief's office, and they hadn't hired in 2 years. There were 4,500 applicants for 45 jobs, and he said, you get the job, but you have to quit tomorrow, you have to start the academy next week, and you have to get your hair cut like a Marine.
Wow.
And the other thing he said was you have to work 6 days a week, and you only get paid for five. Is that okay?
Oh, great. What a country. Wow. Wow. So you had to defer your bachelor's degree until several...
Well, it just took me forever after that because you work shift work. And in those days, the police department wasn't quite as concerned about education as they are now. So they didn't really work with you a lot.
So wait, did you have any friends or, I mean, what compelled you right before graduation? Was it more of a family tradition?
Or? You know, I wanted to be a cop from the time I was a little tiny kid.
Huh.
That's all I ever thought about. And my dad said, you have to go to college. I took English in college because I knew you did a lot of report writing. Mm-hmm. You did a lot of interview and you did a lot of things like that. And it was just something that's all I ever wanted to do. And I just felt really lucky to get hired by the San Diego Police Department because, as I said, they hadn't been doing a lot of hiring, and it was just a great job.
And what some of your from your police career? What are some of the highlights? I mean, obviously the San Ysidro Massacre.
Well, I just had a great career. I've worked every division in the city, transferred around. I became a sergeant after 5 years. I was on the SWAT team as an officer, and then as a sergeant, and then I was the commanding officer as a lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
Just a tremendous experience in that. Went on to become the academy director for a couple of years. Got to put a lot of recruits through, and still funny to see them retiring now, and I think of them as young people. But yeah. It was just, you know, everything I did, I had a great time on the police.
And you rose to the level of chief of police in 93, right?
Right. 93, I was fortunate enough to become the chief of police and was there for 6 years. I just had a really worked strongly with the community. We went into the community policing model at that point and into problem solving. Got some federal grants that really taught us how to do that and became kind of the poster child for that around the United States.
I remember President Clinton came here to one of the community stations.
He did. He came out, and we had a great relationship with the president. He funded a lot of things, and then he came out to San Diego and actually held a big event at the police station, and it was just tremendous. I remember my daughters got their picture taken with them, and when they went to school, the kids said, oh, it's a cardboard cutout. That can't really be the president.
Are those programs still in place, or have they been curtailed due to
budget? Well, they're still in place. It's still the philosophy of the police department, but over the years, it's changed a little bit. They're doing some different things, but they're still very close to the community, and that's one of the points that differentiates the San Diego Police Department from a lot of departments around the country.
Great.
Yeah, I looked at some of the numbers during your tenure as chief. More than 1,000 volunteers became active, and I guess crime decreased by about 40% during your six-year term, if I read that right.
Right. It actually went down about 49%.
About 49, okay.
But, you know, that was really a result of working so closely with the community. The community told us where they wanted us to be, what they wanted us to do, and we would check in every community in San Diego either weekly or biweekly and give them updates and then ask what their other priorities were. And we found that that model worked tremendously. So the year before I became chief of police, we had 165 homicides in San Diego, which is the highest we've ever had. The year that I left, we had 42.
Wow.
And I think that's a direct result of the community working very hard with our police officers and the police officers developing those relationships.
It's a tough job. So, hey, the police academy, when you go through that, I just met a gentleman at the smog check place, and he just got accepted to the police academy. I guess, were they on hiatus for a while due to budgets? Or
they were. We didn't do a lot of hiring over the last few years just because, you know, we've been in some pretty tough budget times. And one of the ways that you balance budgets is by keeping openings. And then we also cut about 150 positions from the police department. Although we didn't cut any bodies, we kept the ones we had. We just weren't doing a lot of hiring. But over the last year, we've started rehiring again. So we've got academies that are full going through right now.
And that's pretty tough training. What is it? Is it 6 months, is it?
Well, it's about 6 months. Yeah. And, you know, there's been different models. I'm not sure which model they're using now. For instance, when I went through, you were in the academy for a month, and then you go out for 2 weeks at a time and ride in a car as a second officer and learn really learn the trade.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a shorter academy in those days. I think it was only about 4 months at that time. Now it's up to 6 months because the standards have risen dramatically over the years, as they should, and it takes a lot longer, and it's a good testing period for these young officers to see if they can make it.
Did you have any close calls or life-threatening situations in your career, or were you able to avoid most of that?
Well, you know, I was pretty active in my career. Even as a captain, I was out taking radio calls. Even as a chief, I would go out and take radio calls because if you get stuck in your office, and they will try to trap you in that office to make all the decisions, especially ones that they should be making from time to time. And, you know, as a SWAT member, I first threw several doors on SWAT incidents. But, you know, overall, I cannot think of a better career for a young person. You're tested every day physically and mentally, and every day is completely different. You can't even anticipate what each call is going to be, and that's what makes it so exciting. It makes it such a challenging career, but really a rewarding career.
Let me ask you this. It may never have come up, but do you go through training? Obviously, when you pull somebody over, you may get somebody who goes off on an anger tangent. How do you train for that? Do you have people yelling in your face like the Marines do, and you have to keep a cool, calm demeanor in spite of that? Or
they do a lot of role play. So several weeks of the academy are now putting them in positions where they have other officers who act as civilians and you do car stops, you do radio calls, you go to domestic violence calls, which are probably the most violent calls you can go to.
Yeah.
So you learn how to do that. You learn how to keep that calm demeanor. You learn how to de-escalate so that when you get somebody who goes off, you can talk them down a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Or you learn when to kind of kick it into a different gear and use the force levels that you need to. So there's a lot of training around that.
I would think in a high-stress situation, you know, people lose it, right, Richard? And the police have to keep calm in the face of that kind of
pressure. I don't know. I've never really been pulled over. So far, so good.
Yeah. I'm sure you were very calm, even if you were.
But, gents, we have to take a short break. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life after this. There is some great Sunday night music, Bonanza. The mayor just rode in on a white stallion.
I haven't heard that theme song for a long time. Wait for Haas Cotwright to walk through that door right now.
You got it. And we're back with the Mayor Jerry Sanders, Richard Musio, and myself. And Richard, why don't you ask a question?
Obviously being in the police department helped you get ready to serve in the nonprofit sector. And I'm in the nonprofit sector, so I sort of know how that works.
you know, it's kind of an interesting thing. After you've been a cop for 26 years, you don't know how your skills apply to something else. But what I learned by moving over to United Way as a CEO there, that management's management, and talking with people and working with people is it's just the same no matter where you're at. And what they find is that military, policing, those folks are really in demand because they're disciplined, they show up on time, they show up every day, they have a good work ethic, and, you know, I think that's really what employers are looking for. So it was a great transition for me, and I learned the job as I was moving forward.
Did you enjoy working in the nonprofit sector?
I did.
I mean, United Way, of course, is a great charity, but in general, what made you want to go into the nonprofit sector?
Well, I just thought it was a different challenge, and I never saw myself just as a cop. I always saw myself as moving on and trying other things, and so a nonprofit, United Way, came to me, and I went through their process and got hired there, and it was very fulfilling to see all the different things in San Diego. And I think on the police side, I was on a lot of nonprofit boards. And you know a lot of the community, and you know where the needs are, and to be able to go to United Way and raise money to fill those needs was really exciting for me.
And then the Red Cross, right?
Well, the Red Cross got into a difficult situation. It was after the first wildfires we had, and there was some misappropriation of money, or it was just spent in different ways that it shouldn't have, and the national chapter came in and fired the board of directors and fired the CEO, which is the first time in the history of the Red Cross they'd done that. And they asked me to come on board as a volunteer, kind of a transition person to reform the board and to reform the agency.
That seems to be your career path, a turnaround artist, I guess.
Well, and I don't think I ever started out thinking that I could do that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you get down to basics and you just do what the agency's supposed to do, a lot of agencies go through mission creep where they chase the dollars. And when you do that frequently, you find yourself doing things off mission. And so you get back to that mission and you fundraise to that mission and train people to that. And Red Cross had 2,500 volunteers, people that were very committed, still are, to going out every single day of the week to house fires, to other fires, to, you know, getting people into housing, to make sure their needs are filled with clothing and toys for the kids. So it was just a lot of fun working with so many volunteers who were so dedicated.
United Way is more or less an umbrella organization working with how many other nonprofits?
Well, United Way is an umbrella organization. When I was there, we had about 150 accredited agencies that we funded. A lot of other agencies, people directed money to, which we were happy to do. They directed them to their kids' schools, to other programs that they thought were important. And I think that's an important model where people can give in the workplace so they can do it on their biweekly check or their mm-hmm. monthly check. And what we found is they'll give seven times more as a donation when they can spread it out over a year period. And it makes them feel good, and mm-hmm. it's good for the community.
Good idea.
You're still board chair for the San Diego Police Foundation, too, right?
Well, I'm not board chair any longer.
Okay.
I started the foundation with some people from the police department and some volunteers from the community. And we had looked at the New York Police Foundation, and they funded a lot of things that the city simply can't buy, that you can't always afford to. We put that into place, and it's been a lot of fun. So many committed volunteers raising money to buy things for the police officers, buy a lot of equipment for the SWAT team, buy a lot of equipment for the canine unit. They buy dogs for the canine unit. And there are people who just have a good time doing good work.
You know what I was sad to see go, and I know it probably was but the horse patrol.
It was, it was a lot of fun. In the first many years we had it, we didn't really know what to do with them. So we'd truck them all over, and there's a lot of downtime. They've got to groom the horses.
Yeah.
They've got to take care of the horses. They've got to train them.
It's an expense.
But we put them in Balboa Park, and they became kind of the ambassadors mm-hmm. for the police department mm-hmm. in Balboa Park. And the other thing I remember is when we would have some demonstrations, especially when the Iraq War first opened up,
mm-hmm.
Those horses are invaluable in crowd control.
Mm-hmm.
People won't listen to cops sometimes, but when you've got a 2,000-pound horse with a cop up on top of it directing people, they pay a lot of attention to
interesting.
That.
Interesting. Well, maybe you'll have to round up a posse somewhere.
I think the sheriffs still have posse.
Oh, really?
So okay. We can borrow their horses when we need them.
That was a nice touch, though, in Balboa Park. I mean, it really was.
Well, that was a lot of fun to watch them, and they had a great time interacting with people, and everybody got their picture taken with the mm-hmm. officers on horseback.
Now, let's talk. Now, one thing that's really inspired me about you is your health. Obviously, you took control and responsibility for your weight, and you lost close to 100 pounds. I guess it's 90, but at what point did that happen? What inspired you? What was your program? Where'd you get the information? I mean, people are all, I'm struggling with my weight, and Richard's not, but anyway.
Well, you know, it was, I had been working out with a trainer a couple days a week for probably about the last 5 or 6 years, and he was saying, you know, you're working out pretty hard, you're walking, but you're not losing any weight. And I really kicked it in gear about 6 months before I turned 60 because I just thought, you know, I'm turning 60. You got to start taking better care of yourself. And I used to be a runner, you know, when I was young, running the 10Ks around town and run all the time because
you
needed to. And then I just got out of it, and my weight really shot up. I mean, I thought a bean and cheese burrito was health food because there was no meat in it.
That's right.
And I just decided to take control. So the trainer said, I'm weighing you every Friday. And I want to start seeing a 2-pound weight loss every week. And, you know, that fat boys don't like to get on the scale.
Right.
So that really motivated me, and that's really where it got started. But it's taken about 2.5-3 years to actually lose that weight.
But
and
what's now, what was your program, though?
So my program was working out with a trainer.
You did a lot of walking, though, right?
Doing a lot of walking, up to about 70 miles a week. And since I've backed off to about 50, 60 miles a week.
So how many days a week is that?
That's every day.
Every day, how many miles a day?
Well, it just depends. On
Joe, you divide by 7, okay.
Well, for our listeners.
On the weekends, I get a lot more in. I'll usually walk twice, so I'll walk.
Is it like an hour and 15-minute walk? Or?
No, it's 6 miles takes me about an hour and 30 minutes, hour and 40 minutes. And I do 6 miles every day.
And you
but
get
on
up,
the weekends,
what time do you get? What time
well, I
you
get out about 5:30, quarter to 6 in the morning. But on the weekends, I'll go out and do 8 or 10 or 12 in the morning, and I'll do another 6 or 8 in the afternoon. So I get the bulk of my walking in over Saturday and Sunday.
And this isn't sauntering. This is a brisk walk.
Well, it's pretty, you know, I'm walking about like, 4 miles an hour, about 15-minute miles.
So that's a brisk walk.
They say you should walk.
That's good, though, because you get your heart rate up for an extended period of time. And then, of course, the other thing you mentioned, Mayor Sanders, is the accountability, having your trainer there to measure the results. I think the accountability is so critical when you're trying to lose weight, because if you're only reporting to yourself, you can maybe slack off.
Well, that's it, because the chocolate nuts in the office that the secretaries have is always a temptation, unless you know you got to get on the scale. But I also change my eating habits.
Okay,
I don't really diet. But I don't eat Mexican food anymore, which was my favorite. I don't eat ice cream anymore, which was my favorite. I really watch what I'm eating, get the low-fat turkey, the 1%. You know, things like that. It's turned out to be kind of a lifestyle change, and I really enjoy it.
Gotcha. But we'll get into the year of the beer and all that good stuff when we come back with more It's Your Money and Your Life after this announcement. Welcome back to It's Your Money and Your Life with that great police-like music in honor of our guest, former Police Chief Mayor Sanders, and now over to Richard to thank some sponsors.
That was Hawaii 5-0. That show's back on TV now, and I don't mean the old one. I guess there's a new version. I don't watch TV, though.
You're kidding.
Oh, thank you to our sponsors, UBS, Mr. Michael Coranta and Drew Freitas. Thank you very much. Carl Sheeler and Business Valuations Limited, the best estate planning attorney in town, Rich Gaines with Family Legacy Legal, Regents Bank, Steve Sefton and Sean Puckett. Cost Segregation Initiatives with Mr. Joel Grushkin. He's going to be on, I think, the first weekend in December. Jason Kruger, soon to be a daddy for the first time at Signature Analytics. And our favorite CPAs on the planet, Paul Polito and Don Epic, Polito Epic CPAs up in Vista. Thank you, everybody. Also, thanks to you guys on that list who also are helping me out at the Oceanside Turkey Trot Thanksgiving morning. Very much appreciated.
Very much so. And you can find all the information you need to know about them on our website, iymoney.com. There's a tab for sponsors. All their contact info is there. Check them out. We don't have any sponsors who are not excellent on this. Everybody is top.
Absolutely
top
right. During the break, we're talking to Joe, who wants to lose weight, about the fact that you also have to move your feet before you eat, not just do the eat part. So move your feet before you eat, Joe. I want to see you out there Thanksgiving morning.
I will.
You got no excuses.
I will make every effort to be there.
No, you will be there. You will not make every effort. You will just be there.
I'm not going to sign the contract just yet, but I'll. That's early and it's Oceanside, but I'll do my best. But speaking of, now here's the real conundrum about our mayor. He is a big beer fan, craft beer, etc. And I heard him talk about this in a speech earlier, and I wanted he still enjoys the beer, and he's able to keep the weight off. So what's the deal, Mayor Sanders? How does that work?
Well, we all make choices in life, and one of the choices I've made is to drink a few beers and eat a little bit less. So, and when you drink a few beers, you also know you got to get up that next morning and walk it off. So I think that's the most important part of it.
Yeah. Now, the craft beer industry has grown up in this county, right?
It's just huge. And it's been really a pleasure to work with these folks.
I mean, you helped that along, right?
Well, we've worked with them. Mm-hmm. We have one person in our economic development team that helps them with permitting and expediting mm-hmm. the permitting and locating places where they can go and helping them with every facet of their operation. What you find is there's a lot of financial people in it. Mm-hmm. This isn't just something where you find a couple slop bucket guys out going and creating beer.
Right.
These are chemists. These are people who have gone through school at UC Davis, has a beer brewing school. Very demanding. So it's really science when
like
you go and look
gang,
at it.
It's like Wolfgang Puck of beer to these guys. We had Greg Cook on, by the way, a few months ago. I'll
he is, yeah. And he is a hoot. That guy is so
CEO
funny.
Of
well, that was a fun show.
I can imagine. He is a wild guy.
I don't remember much of it. I'm just kidding.
Now, we don't want to offend it with 72 breweries out there and then some. You don't have to mention a favorite beer, but are there several that you like, or do you have a...
I like all of them. I've learned to like IPAs.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good local breweries have good IPAs.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at Green Flash, you look at Stone, you mm-hmm. look at Hess, you look at Carl Strauss, all of them have great IPAs.
Yeah.
And then I also like the porters. Mm-hmm. Ballast Point has a great porter. Stone has a great porter. So, it's just the different breweries are doing really different things, and they're brewing new beers all the time. It's really neat. And we have White Labs in San Diego, which provides the yeast that really creates a taste in beer for almost all of North America.
Huh.
And they have done a tremendous job. We helped them expand, and they have done just a bang-up job.
We're the high-tech of beer. How about that?
We are the high-tech of beer, and we're being recognized that way across the country mm-hmm. right now.
And there was just some big beer festival here, which I was out of town for, but I think there was just recently.
Well, and so only the beer industry would have beer week that lasts 10 days.
Right.
Because you can't drink all the beer you want in right. 7 days, so you got to extend that three more.
Well, you know, one week and 3 days rounds down to 1 week if you do the math.
That's
I'm
exactly.
a CPA, so I
that's
can do this
good.
Stuff.
So you do round down. I
you
like
do
that.
Round down, yeah.
Okay.
Have to be, 4 days to round up to two, so...
So in addition to beer, now when you came in as mayor, Mayor Sanders, I mean, things were in a little bit of a shambles, and
there was a pension scandal. It was more than a little bit of shambles.
Well, my theory about the pensions is that this happened to many cities all over the country. I think there's no reflection on you. It's obviously people who were involved in investing these things. They got into some high-risk stuff, and it went south and sour.
Well, it's even more than that. And what happens is, in government especially, you'll notice most of the private sector has gone away from defined benefit plans that guarantees you a certain rate. Most have gone to 401ks, but government's not done that. Now, San Diego's the first city I know of that has done it.
Mm-hmm.
And with Prop B, we went to a defined contribution now, which will be a 401k-style model. But what happened in cities and counties all over the country is the politicians did not make the payments.
Mm-hmm.
So they guarantee these benefits. They tell the people that you pay your part, and some of them didn't make the employees pay anything. We make them pay 50% of that, and we ramped that up while I was mayor. But you can't have a plan that you don't put the assets into.
Well,
and that's exactly what's happened. The state of Illinois didn't put in money for 20 years, and now they've only got about 3 years' worth of money left in that pension system. And so you can't do that. And pension systems were started, the defined benefit, probably in the 40s and 50s. So people lived to be 65, 70
mm-hmm.
at the outside. They didn't retire till they were 62, so there's a short retirement period.
Yeah.
And so over the years, they started giving better benefits, and pretty soon people are retiring at 50 and living to 85, and the payments are the same. And it doesn't take a mathematician to understand that simply doesn't work any longer.
So it's a function of demographics and planning, I guess, and the lack thereof. But anyway, Rich, you had some other questions.
So you went in a runoff against Donna Frye. And what other issues, though, were facing you in 2005 besides the pension issue?
Well, we had the pension issue, obviously. Kroll was doing a report on us. The SEC was investigating the city of San Diego for fraud because we didn't, the city prior didn't disclose on bonds how bad a shape the city was in. The U.S. attorney was investigating. Several council members had been arrested. Five were determined to be negligent in all of this. We didn't have any financial audits, so that we didn't have audited financials for 6 years. We were out of the bond market entirely at that point. And we simply, the budget was not structurally balanced. So what would happen was in the years past, they would inflate revenue estimates so that they had all the money they needed, but they knew the revenue wouldn't come in, and then they simply stopped doing any infrastructure work and all of that. So, you know, infrastructure literally gone to pot, as in potholes. The budget was so far out of whack that it took us quite a while to bring that back into play.
So is the turnaround of the pension system that your greatest accomplishment, in your opinion, as mayor, or is there something else?
Well, you know, I think it's been a combination of things, and it's all revolves around the finances. We have a financially structured budget now that's correct. We make the correct payments to the pension system. We reformed retiree health care, and the deficit in the retiree health care was every bit as large as the pension deficit. So we're saving $800 million over the next 25 years with reform on that. We'll be saving between $1 and $2 billion on going to a defined contribution plan over the next 25 to 30 years. But we also now have a balanced budget, and we're projecting surpluses out for the next 5 years of about $200 million. We have reserves at 14%.
What's a government surplus again? I'm just kidding.
I know. So,
that's an oxymoron.
that'll go back into the infrastructure and hiring and all of that. But it took a long time. Yeah. When I started as mayor, and we're on an earthquake fault, we have fires all the time. The reserves in the city of San Diego were only $35 million. Right now they're at $166 million, which is 14%. Wall Street wanted it at 8%. But we have put money away because we know over the next 2 years, pension payments going to go up for 2 years before it goes down because of the fact we're closing the defined benefit program and you've got to make a bigger payment. Then it goes down dramatically over the next 25 years. So we've put the money away to cushion the city over the next couple of years from that and from redevelopment being taken away when the state stole that money. And what's happened there is we don't know whether there will continue to pay some of the things out of redevelopment funds that are still there or whether the state's going to take that money. So we've tried to leave a big cushion for the city as it moves forward.
Is that still in flux, that money? I think it's $100 million we're talking about or something.
Oh, we're talking literally hundreds of millions
for San Diego alone?
Right.
Wow.
And it is still in flux. We have turned in what are called ROPs, which is you know, what we think are reasonable payments that should be made out of tax increment, which is what redevelopment is. State's denying a lot of those. So Petco Park, which is downtown redevelopment, it's about $11 million a year. And the state's saying, no, we don't think we're going to allow you to pay that anymore. You're going to have to pay it out of the general fund. Convention Center, that phase two, which happened a long time ago, they're saying the same thing about that. So that's the reason we've put this money away, so we can determine what the state will allow, but they keep it goes back and forth every 6 months.
And how critical is it, in your opinion, for San Diego for the Chargers to get a new stadium?
Well, I think it's absolutely critical, and I think it's actually going to be an economic generator. Put that in the east end of downtown, it's just like Petco Park, and we saw that Petco Park generated $7 for every dollar invested in that, and that's what's made Gaslamp.
Well, let's pick up with that when we come back right after this break. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life after these announcements. Stay tuned. All right, we're back with the last segment of It's Your Money and Your Life with our illustrious 34th Mayor of San Diego, Mary Jerry Sanders, and Richard Muscio. And Richard, why don't you take a question right here?
So any words of advice for our new mayor? What did you think about the mayoral race between Bob Filner and Carl DeMaio, by the way? And what advice would you give our new mayor, Mr. Filner?
Well,
besides drink beer and walk every day.
Take two Advil every morning.
Right.
It'll help you out through the day, loosen you up a little bit. You know, I obviously supported Carl because I thought he had the reform agenda in place, but the voters picked Mr. Filner. And I think what it amounts to is that you've got to pay attention to every segment of the community, and that's what we have tried to do. And you also have to pay attention to the council. While it's a strong mayor form of government, which started in my first term, you still have to get 5 votes for anything you want to get done. And if you don't listen to the council and work with the council, you simply can't accomplish anything, and you need to accomplish a lot in this city.
You know what I kind of missed, though? I mean, when we had the other form of government, the mayor would sit down on a council. I'm thinking maybe just one day a month have the mayor sit with the council, just so citizens...
I think that's a great idea moving forward. I didn't find sitting in the council chambers was all that much fun.
No, one day a month, just for the citizens, so they get to see you, you know, publicly.
And you know what it's really amounted to, though? That's given me a tremendous amount of time to be out in the community.
Right.
At community events, giving speeches.
Right.
So really interacting with people on a much more personal level than sitting in a council
chamber. That's all I'm saying, two hours.
I think that they should go to every council meeting from now on, starting December 3rd.
Who, the mayor?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Really?
That would be good.
He'll be drinking more than beer.
give Mr. Fielder something to do. So. Hey, one more question before Joe has his question. So back in 07, you came out with a reversal on your stance on same-sex marriage because your daughter Lisa is gay. And I find the topic interesting because working on this project with Billie Jean King that's coming out at Sundance in January, of course, she's been one of the leading proponents for gay rights for many, many, many years in this country. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and what was behind your change of heart?
Well, I can. I had several gay staff members. I've marched in a gay pride parade since I was a police captain, and you know we've always worked hard in that community. Sometimes you get trapped in a political stance, and that's what I had gotten myself into. And finally, it came down to the fact that I thought I needed to support equality, and it was a decision that was very important to the family, but it was also very important to the community. And my daughter never pressed me on that issue at all. She was not out at that point. She was out to us and out to friends. But I told her later, not every gay person gets outed in front of the entire world after that press conference. Mm-hmm. But she's turned out to be a real leader. And, you know, I've had an opportunity to really play a role in this, and I'm very proud of that. I just think it's an important thing. And I think when history looks back, the equality is going to be something that is important to everybody. So I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, I mean, hats off to you. I just think that's tremendous because I'm you know, very well, as people know, I'm very outspoken about intolerance in this world. And certainly there is still intolerance in the LGBT community or with regard to people's attitudes and views. And I think that's unfortunate because I don't think anybody should not have equal rights because of what it is they believe in or practice. So hats off to you on that one. Joe, I know you had some questions.
Well, we've got this great new library that's about to be unveiled. And actually, by the time the show is heard, there's a huge celebration for Mayor Sanders Saturday. So maybe you could tell us what you expect at that event and tell us about the library, what the status.
Well, the library is really a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And that happened because of committed community volunteers. That's been on the drawing boards for 30 years.
Let's think Mel Katz, right?
He's a Mel huge, Katz, yeah. Judith Harris, just a whole group of people around that. Mm-hmm. And so when we approached it, we didn't have any money in the general fund for that, and we started putting together sources, and we still had redevelopment. We took $80 million from that, got the school district to give us $20 million to build a high school inside of the library, so two floors will be a high school. Mm-hmm. What a great use of that. And then a $20 million state grant that could only be used for a downtown library. And the rest has been done through philanthropy and mm-hmm. a lot of generous people,
Mr. Jacobs,
Irwin and Joan, mm-hmm. But a lot of other people have given, and it's just been a tremendous thing. So it's on time, on budget. It'll be turned over to the city, completed in March, and then actually open in July.
Wow.
So we're going to have kind of a farewell celebration where I get to thank everybody in San Diego mm-hmm. for all that they've done over the past 7 years. And this has been a total team effort. This is not me. This is really the San Diego community that's helped turn the city around.
That's a true public-private partnership. Yeah. Just really great to see that kind of collaboration happening.
And what's going to happen on the former site down on East Street there? Are they going to just
I'm not sure what's going to happen to that. That'll probably be determined later on, but that's a pretty valuable piece of property that could be redeveloped into housing, could be used for a lot of things. And we've done a lot of housing in the downtown area, affordable housing. And I think that some of those sites are perfectly suited for that.
And then the current site of Qualcomm, if we do get a new stadium, you had some good thoughts about that with regard to San Diego State, right?
Well, I think San Diego State's perfectly positioned to take that piece of property and turn it into the front door to their campus. I mean, they've grown, they're landlocked, they're two trolley stops away from that. They've got a master plan that they've showed us that they could really use that for research facilities, for dorms, for a hotel, for a lot of things that would produce tax revenue for the city, but also really give San Diego State what it needs. And San Diego State's the preeminent state university in that system, in the Cal State system. They don't really fit in it in that they're much larger, much more advanced than most of them, but they have done a tremendous job over the years.
And go Aztecs in Wyoming next week.
Well, as you move into, you're moving into to lead the Chamber of Commerce, so maybe that's something the Chamber can help lead on.
And well, you know, and I think that's what's exciting about this new Chamber position, and I feel very fortunate to have that, is I still get to weigh in on public policy. So we make sure the convention center expansion gets done. That's $700 million every year in economic generation for the city of San Diego, 7,000 permanent new jobs, 4,000 construction jobs. City of San Diego, just in transient occupancy tax, will get about $13 million a year more. And that's a very conservative estimate right at the beginning. So I get to weigh in on a lot of those things with the chamber and really continue to see San Diego grow and benefit from smart decisions and to create jobs.
And in addition to lobbying for a new football stadium, can you lobby for a new football team? Oh, wait, I wasn't supposed to say that on there. I'm sorry.
Hey, the Padres could use a little help, too. So, but hey, they had a good second half.
Padres might be okay this year if we can get a pitcher.
Now, do you take in many football and baseball games and all that, Mayor?
No, I don't go to any. well, let me tell you why. We have boxes at both, the city boxes, and we donate all the tickets for those to the Wounded Warriors.
Excellent.
So the people who are in Balboa Hospital and suffered serious wounds in the wars, they get to use those tickets, and we get thank you cards that are unbelievable from people who would never be able to attend a football game, an Aztec game, a Charger game, or a baseball game. It's been really neat to see them.
See, I'm just so glad people get to see the human side of our mayor, because it's when you get out there in politics, you automatically have 50% of the people who may not like you for.
So I got reelected. 54% of the vote. My wife said, "Okay, Mr. Center of the Universe, that means 46% of people hate you." And I said, "You know, you're right, honey." Thank you for putting it in perspective.
Got to keep you humble, but
that's true. The mayor didn't have to go to the final. He won a majority at the primary.
So, did you think you'll get back into politics ever, or do you think this is it for you?
Never, ever, 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 ever. This has been an alien life form for me. I don't think the city needed a politician at that point in time. So, I am very privileged to have been in a good position to help out. But moving forward, politics are not going to be in my life. I just I prefer to be out doing different things and living in a little bit more normal environment where you can be yourself.
Outstanding, outstanding. So, Kevin, how we do?
Kevin,
how we doing? How we doing on time here? Okay, so we have about a minute left. Are there any final thoughts? Anybody you want to just unload on or any?
No.
Anybody you want to thank?
I want to thank all of San Diego. I mean, everybody has been a part of this turnaround. People tend to credit one individual. It's really not me. It has been a tremendous staff that's worked really hard. City employees work real hard. But also the community was very tolerant. We cut 2,000 positions out of the city budget over the last 7 years just to make ends meet. People haven't complained about that, and they have supported the things that we've tried to do. So San Diego needs to congratulate itself for turning itself around.
Outstanding, outstanding. So anyway, well, it's been a real honor and a privilege and a pleasure.
Very much appreciated. Very much appreciate your service.
It's always fun to come on and chat with you guys especially, so thank you.
Our pleasure. And
everybody, downtown Oceanside, Thanksgiving morning, be there or be square. Overweight or something.
Congrats on the library. We'll be there all together in July for their grand opening. So thank you, Darren Pudgel, by the way. Thank you, Kevin Terrell, our soundboard guy. He's extraordinary. Craig Blanke, Speedy Recovery. Carmen Chile, thank you. And Dave Sniff, our programming genius, thank you. Have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Toyota Carlsbad Service Center.
Hello. My car is very ill. Don't yell at me.
It's ill?
It makes a funny noise, like tickety-tickety, and sometimes it goes chipookity-chipookity. Don't yell at me.
Well, sir, why do you keep saying don't yell at me?
Because that's what they do at car places. They yell at you, and they make you break out in hives, and they never talk to you after you buy the car?
Well, not at Toyota Carlsbad. We've been repairing Toyotas with relaxed, friendly service for 40 years.
You won't say, what do you want, punk, and make your eyes all buggy?
No.
Well, thank you.
At Toyota Carlsbad, Carlsbad will fix your Toyota right the first time using genuine Toyota parts by our trained Toyota technicians.
I really appreciate this. Don't yell at me.
If you say that one more time, I'm going to yell at you.
I knew it. I knew you would yell at me.
No, just kidding.
Oh.
Toyota Carlsbad.
Rainy season is here, so get your Toyota ready with new tires from Toyota Carlsbad's Toyota Tire Center. Or see clearly today with new genuine Toyota wiper inserts on sale now for just $3.99 each plus tax. See more specials online at ToyotaCarlsbad.com.
We follow the story.